Before we start this episode of Conversations with Kenyatta, I'm excited to tell you about my new partnership with Audible. Listeners can go to www.audibletrial.com/Kenyatta to receive a free 30-day trial. Audible is a wonderful resource with audiobooks for every reader. It even has titles from authors that have been on my podcast, such as Dr. Dan Bouck's Democracy's Data and Gail Lukasik's White Like Her. And please note that this is an affiliate link, so I may receive a commission with no cost to you, just a free trial with so many wonderful titles. And I love to read. But with that, here's this week's episode of Conversations with Kenyatta. Welcome to episode 31 of Conversations with Kenyatta. Today's guest is Regina Mason. She's a genealogist, a direct descendant of William Grimes, and part of the team that edited The Life of William Grimes, The Runaway Slave. Welcome to Conversations with Kenyatta. I'm excited to learn more about your family history and your story today.
Well, Kenyatta, thank you for having me. I've followed you for a long time. I'm excited about the programming that you're doing, and I can't wait to tell you my story.
So let's dive right in and tell me a little bit about your childhood and background.
Okay, well, I'm a child of the 1960s and early 70s. I grew up in North Oakland in California near the UC Berkeley campus, and that's where the free speech movement unfolded, and there was always something going on in the form of protest, especially about the Vietnam War. I have a sister and a brother. I'm the youngest of three. My mom's from the Pacific Northwest with roots that go back to the Gold Rush era in California. My father was born in Berkeley, and his roots are from Louisiana and Texas. Now, in the neighborhood that I grew up, on the opposite end of town towards the downtown area of Oakland, were the headquarters of the notorious Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. I would see the Black Panthers everywhere. And the reason why I'm giving you this background is because there were some really crazy times going on, very much like we're seeing today, in terms of race relations and so forth. So I'm this child doing kid things, but also really trying to absorb what's going on in my community, what's going on a national level. So I remember when Dr. Martin Luther King was killed or assassinated, and I remember the riots that broke out across the nation because of that. But I never understood why there was so much anger and so much racial discord. And, you know, it was just crazy times to grow up in. And it wasn't until 1972 when I was given a class assignment on having to look into my country of origin and roots that I started to piece information together that informed why there was so much racial discord in the news and in the world that I lived. That's a story that I hope that we will dive in a little further. But that was basically my childhood, the era that I grew up. I mean, my childhood was wonderful, but it was also layered with sadness because my mother and father divorced when I was an early age. And I also grew up Catholic, and in the Catholic tradition, divorce was unacceptable.
Right.
I attended Catholic school and so forth, and went to Mass every Sunday without my parents. My siblings and I would walk to St. Augustine's Church, which was also the school that which was adjacent to the church as well. It was a joyful pain, a bittersweet childhood in a sense, but a lot of love nonetheless.
With the assignment you got in 1972 to kind of figure out and dive into your country of origin, is that when you discovered William Grimes and how he was related to you?
Yes and no.
Okay.
And I say that for two reasons. William Grimes came along a lot later, but this class assignment were seeds that were planted that would eventually take me on this incredible journey. But the country of origin assignment was, I guess it was my teacher's way of illustrating to her students that we were all from another country before America, that America was, quote unquote, the New World. And so we had to explore our country of origin, which meant that I would have to make a connection to Africa. Now, for me, in my mind, that wasn't something that I could relate to, because during my era, Africa was depicted in television as a backward place. Mm-hmm. Never mind that it is the birthplace or the motherland of all humankind. Those lessons weren't being taught in my era. The only thing I knew about Africa were those exaggerated stereotypes that I had seen in television. And so I didn't feel that kinship, or I couldn't make that connection. So I went home and I asked my mother, where are we from? And she started to tell me a story of our roots in America. Africa never came up. It was just too far removed. And so she said something to me that really made me pause. She was telling me about her grandfather, a Grandpa Fuller, who had been enslaved as a child in Virginia, and that he was the product of an interracial relationship. Well, that really floored me because for two reasons. Number one, it was the first time that there was even a mention of or a hint of our family being connected to slavery. Mm-hmm. And second of all, to know that her grandfather, someone that she had actually known, had been enslaved as a child in Richmond, Virginia. That really surprised me, and it told me that slavery wasn't that far removed from the family, was just a few generations away. So I started asking more questions about her grandfather, and slavery all of a sudden became upfront and personal. It was no longer those people from long ago or those people over there. No, I was staring at it through my lineage for the first time. And I wasn't happy about it. Actually, as a child, it made me angry. I was mad that some person would enslave my great-grandfather. Mm. So, it was a revelation. And in the course of this conversation, my mother was trying to tell me things that I should be proud of. But, Kenyatta, I just could not get beyond the inherent complexities of this newly revealed element of my history. Mm-hmm. And so I would eventually make it through this assignment, and it was an oral assignment. So I had to stand in front of my class and talk about this connection to Africa that I couldn't even articulate because I couldn't pinpoint what country in Africa. Mm-hmm. I mean, Africa is a continent. But other children in the class, they were able to say where they were from, what city, they had this heritage that I didn't have. Mm-hmm. And so I I had real misgivings about this assignment and about my history. And my mother knew this. So a week after the assignment, which I would survive, she took me to see my Aunt Catherine. Aunt Catherine is really my mother's first cousin. She's was a lot of years older than my mom. And because of that, we always gave her the title of aunt. That's just how we did in our family. We didn't call our super seniors by their first names. And Aunt Catherine treated me like I was her niece anyway. So it was out of love and definitely a lot of respect. And, you know, she embraced me. She goes, "Oh, you have a proud history that you just don't know about. So I need to tell you a few things." And she went on to just really capture my imagination. And because she was quite a storyteller. And she talked about so many things. We have California ties to that go way back in California. And neither of us knew at the time she was talking to me that it was the era of the California Gold Rush. But one story that stayed with me or captivated me in that moment and eventually stayed with me for years was she said three things that essentially amounted to three little Q's. She goes, "Well, you know, there is an ancestor in the family by the name of Grimes. And he was from New Haven, Connecticut. And he had in some way was connected with the Underground Railroad." Well, that stopped me in my tracks. I'm in fifth grade, and fifth grade is usually when you're introduced to American slavery and you talk about the Underground Railroad. So I knew what that represented. It was a resistance element to this history that I needed to hear. And I remember asking her, "Well, what was his full name?" She didn't know. Mm-hmm. I said, "Well, what else can you tell me?" Well, there was really nothing else. And that little bit of a story stayed with me for 20 years. And so we're fast forwarding my life. And at this time, I'm a young wife and mother of two little girls. And I thought about them. And I thought about me not knowing my history. And I never wanted them to ever stand in front of their classroom and not be able to articulate where they came from. Mm. Or not have pride about their, you know, country of origin. So that's when I took up genealogy. I did it for them. I said, and then in the back of my mind, it was like, is there any truth to the stories that my Aunt Catherine told me? So I would go on this journey of discovery, and I began, of course, with the basic genealogy principles. You start with yourself, and then you go back into time, generationally. And I found family members in the censuses. Mm-hmm. I found, you know, vital statistics and so forth. But I did not find anyone with the surname of Grimes. And I began to think this was really kind of a silly endeavor, because I just couldn't make that connection. Then something remarkable happened, because at the same time that I was studying and working with genealogy, I was also reading everything I could find on the abolitionist movement, everything I could find on the Underground Railroad. And one day I was reading Charles L. Bloxon's book, The Underground Railroad, First Person Narratives or Daring Escapes, something to that effect. Mm-hmm. And I had these library books that needed to go back. And at that time, when I was into my work, I had library books not only for myself, but for my children. So, I mean, we had lots of books. And I remember as I was collecting them, that the book I just mentioned by Charles L. Bloxon. And I remember thinking, "Oh, I haven't even looked at this one." So I immediately thumbed through to the Free New England section of the book or chapter. And within the first two paragraphs, I came across a passage that just made my heart race. Mm. Bloxon wrote about a man by the name of William Grimes from Savannah, Georgia, who had escaped that city by way of ship. And this ship took him to New York, where he was put in contact with Underground Railroad workers who directed him on foot to New Haven, Connecticut.
Mm.
So in that one little passage, all three clues that Aunt Catherine gave me showed up.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable, but yet I didn't know if this was the Grimes that Aunt Catherine was talking about.
Right.
So Bloxon had a bibliography. He didn't have footnotes, but that bibliography stated that this William Grimes person had written his own narrative. I had to find that book.
Mm.
And I would find it with the help of my local library. And so the book, the original publication, because William Grimes actually wrote in 1825 at a time when African-American autobiography was rare. So to find that original edition would have been like a needle in a haystack.
Right.
But in 1971, it had been republished. And in 1971, it had been republished in a book called Five Black Lives. It was an anthology that contained William Grimes' narrative. It was still in print. And Cody's Bookstore, which is no longer, but that was by the UC Berkeley campus, had three copies on its shelf.
Mm.
I went there and I bought all three, not even knowing if this man was related to me. But I just had this feeling that he was.
I want to just stop you for 1 second. Sorry to interrupt, because I want to make sure the listeners understand a couple of things, because you've really been describing the process in depth, which I love, right? It's like a lesson in genealogy. But the one thing you said is that oral history, right? You had that story from Aunt Catherine. You didn't know if it was correct, but you used your tools in genealogy to prove or disprove, right? So you're still on.
Absolutely.
During the time I kind of wanted to bring this up, but having the oral history. And then what I also love that you mentioned is that you looked into the abolitionist movement, that you started to read everything you can get your hands on, that you wanted to find William Grimes, you wanted to find this Grimes person to determine if they were your ancestor, and you looked at other ways to do it outside of just the traditional genealogy, kind of census records, vital records. And I think it's so important that people understand history and where their ancestors fit into that history. And also looking at information on the Underground Railroad as well, because that's another clue, or was another clue, that you got from Aunt Catherine. So I think those are important points for anyone that's researching their genealogy to hone in on, in the way in which you went on this journey. So I just wanted to interrupt right there real quick, but I'll let you continue to tell your story because it's fascinating. So continue.
Well, Kenyatta, I'm so happy you mentioned that, because if I had stuck with just the traditional modes of genealogy, I never would have found this book.
Mm-hmm.
I never would have found the fact that this person was associated in some way with the Underground Railroad. So I was lucky to have the oral history, as you mentioned. So, yes, and I encourage everyone to not discard the oral histories. I mean, there's always nuggets of truth. Mm-hmm. I mean, Aunt Catherine, even in the stories that she gave me, they weren't always on point, but there was always a thread of truth.
Mm-hmm.
Then you parlay that with, or couple that, partner it with the research. that was a huge find for me to come upon this narrative, because no one in the family knew the first name of our ancestor. We only knew him as Grimes. And on top of that, no one even knew that he had written his life story. It was lost. It was lost, but yet there were threads that led to it. So in that moment, I didn't know what if this man belonged to me, but the story he told was so darn bitter, angry. And it turns out that this William Grimes had written his book after a life-altering ordeal. Mm. William Grimes, just to give you a little background about him, he endured 10 masters. He was born in 1784 on the heels of the American Revolution. He's a mulatto slave, meaning he was mixed heritage. He, in his book, talks about his mother, but he doesn't name her. He talks about his white father, who's a wealthy planter from King George, Virginia, but he doesn't name him. In his book, he leaves clues, though. He talks about a murder that took place on his father's plantation, which I would uncover by studying rare newspapers. And I would learn his father's name is Benjamin Grimes. And once I found that in this narrative, I just opened this book up in ways that no other historian had attempted. Mm-hmm. So, but that's a story unto itself. But I want your audience to know how I did finally piece this all together to connect William Grimes to me. And it came at a point when I was about ready to give up on this story because I just could not advance the genealogy. I couldn't make that connection to from my mother to this William Grimes. But it turns out that I was going back too far, too fast. I mean, I had this book. I had hoped that he had mentioned family names in it that would connect, but the only family name he mentions is his wife, who was Clarissa Caesar. Mm-hmm. And that name was foreign to me. And so I was talking to Catherine. I said, is Caesar a family name? And she she said to me, she goes, you know, Gina, that's my nickname, Gina. She said, I don't know. It might be. But then she said something that just blew me away. She said, I've got to get you the family Bible. All the family names are written in it.
Oh, the family Bible.
I'm on this search. She knows it. It's been on my mind forever. But this is the first time I'm hearing talk about a family Bible. And I remember calling my mom and said, do you know anything about a family Bible? And she said, you know, I've heard about a Bible, but I don't believe it exists because I've never seen it. Well, my mother is 89 years old. She was born in 1933. And Catherine was born in 1917. So, and Catherine may have known a little bit more than what my mom knew, but my mom hadn't seen the Bible. So I said, well, Aunt Catherine, who has this Bible? And she said, well, I don't know where it is. Well, that wasn't helpful. And then she said, well, I think it's in my sister's attic. And when the weather gets better, I'm going up to Portland to see if I can find it. Well, Aunt Catherine she didn't fly. She took the train and she wasn't sure when she was going to go. So I am waiting for this Bible to show up. But at the same time, I'm doing the paper trail and I'm discovering a whole lot of information. But it was maybe a year or two later, and Catherine shows up at a family barbecue with the Bible.
Wow.
In hand. And I still had not made that connection, but I was sure that I would make that connection because I found other evidence that suggested, but nothing concrete. And I was the first one to study those Bible pages. And, oh my God, it was incredible. It took, I was speechless because the pages were so frail. And so the script was elegant and at sometimes hastily written in. And I just was holding in my hands a piece of my heritage that I had no idea existed. And there among all of these names, and there were two pages of script, front and back, spilling to the edges of names, births, deaths, marriages. And I remember gazing and seeing the name William Grimes with the death date of August 21st, 1865. And I knew without a shadow of a doubt that William Grimes in the Bible was the same William Grimes that had written his life story first in 1825 and again in 1855 with just an added chapter chronicling his life in old age. And part of the reason why I knew this is because I had found obituaries that talked about William Grimes, the author, as having died on that same date in August. I also recognized his name, his wife's name, Clarissa Caesar, whose marriage date was noted and whose death date was noted in the Bible pages. So in that moment, and I knew that I was trailing the right family line, and all I could do was weep. It was just a powerful moment.
I can only imagine that because you have been looking for so long, but I think the one of the things that jumps out at me, and that it happens a lot when we're doing this research, is, you know, that family Bible, right? You can have people know that you're looking for the family history, but sometimes it doesn't necessarily click to say, maybe you should take a look at the family Bible, you know, before it's like many years in, into your research, right? So maybe for those listening, ask about the family Bible first. Do we have one?
Absolutely.
Who has it? Where is it? You know, I think that's right. so important. And it's great that you were able to find that to kind of, to, you know, just verify the information that you had already discovered on your journey. So let's get into the life of William Grimes, the book that was published, or his narrative that was published. I know that you collaborated with a gentleman named William L. Andrews to republish it. So how did you guys meet, and what made you decide to collaborate with him?
So Kenyatta, before I answer your question about the collaboration with Bill Andrews, I just want your listeners to know that I would have discovered William Grimes as my ancestor without the family Bible once I began studying rare newspapers, obituaries, and so forth.
Okay.
I would find him 4 years later, where his children in the San Francisco newspaper, either the Pacific Appeal or the Elevator, they noted his death. And I had found names later. So there's hope. If you don't have a family Bible, you still will find wonderful nuggets about your family. But again, the first rule of thumb is to ask, is there one? But now, Bill Andrews. When I discovered the Grimes narrative, I needed someone to help me make sense of it. I really didn't understand that genre of literature because William Grimes's book reads, it's raw. So I needed an expert to help me navigate his story and understand the times. Bill Andrews was the only living professor that had written at length about William Grimes. And when I say at length, it was maybe 2 to 3 pages. I found reference to William Grimes in a book called To Tell a Free Story, early African-American autobiography. Bill Andrews was the author. So I reached out to him. He was at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill at the time. He's since retired. But I wrote him, and he was so gracious. He responded to me. I let him know where my journey has taken me, what I had found about William Grimes, and the exciting new level I'd taken his narrative. And we developed a friendship over time. And 2 years into that friendship, after I had shared information with him about letters that I had found that negotiated William Grimes' freedom, he wrote me back. He said, you know, you've preserved and found extraordinary information about William Grimes. He said, you and I ought to team up. So it was actually him who approached me. Bill knew that I wanted to get published, but I didn't know where to start. I didn't know in which direction to take this. I'm not a writer, and so forth. So I said, sure, let's do this. So he had the vision, and I had the information. He was the man that who could put this narrative in historical and literary content or context. I was the one that had done the research. So the annotations that you see in the book, they're all mine. So it's based on my research. In fact, the book, you'll get 3 voices. You'll get Bill Andrews. You'll get his introduction. You'll get the Grimes narrative, both the 1825 and 1855 editions. And you will also get my journey, which is the afterword that I put together that ended up becoming a film. But that's how we partnered. We got it done. William Grimes's, this edition of the Grimes narrative is an authoritative edition. And I am proud to say that whenever I go and see new information about William Grimes that some scholar has put together, I see where the edition that Bill and I annotated have been referenced, and that I am so proud of that. So that's how we partnered.
That's great. I am so glad. I mean, it definitely has been a journey for you. And it's such a fascinating story. And you mentioned your film. So that kind of leads into my next question. Your film, Gina's Journey, kind of 2 parts to that. Sort of, you know, what is it about? And you said, I think it's in the afterword of the book. But then also, what was the process like in creating that film?
Bill and I had done a book signing at University Press Books, which was across the street from the UC Berkeley campus. And in the audience was a filmmaker by the name of Sean Durant. And he said, you really need to capture this story on film. It will reach a wider audience. And see, the work that Bill and I had done was primarily for educators, primarily for students of the slave narrative genre. It wasn't really mainstream. And so it would be the film that would take the story mainstream. I remember saying to Sean, well, it would be nice to put this on film, but how are we going to do that? And he said, you know, I don't know how we are going to do it in terms of funding. He said, but we're going to do this. So I latched on to him. He latched on to me. And we decided to do this film. And Gina's Journey is my journey to discover William Grimes. And it takes you through all the twists and turns of my journey. And at the same time, you'll see highlights of the Grimes narrative. And in the, it's a docudrama. We also have Bill Andrews, who's been being interviewed. And we have a scholar by the name of Susanna Ashton, who's written a little bit. In fact, she studied William Grimes in depth. We have her voice and her expertise in the film. And then we also have John Templeton, who is a African-American scholar in the Bay Area on African-American history. And so they all came on board. We got it done. We put the film in several film festivals. It did very well. We won a few awards. And now you can watch the film on Amazon Prime.
Oh, wow.
So it's there for the ages. We've got a wonderful following. So the narrative rewrite or the new narrative edition serves its purpose. It was printed in 2008. It's still the authoritative edition. Today, with my continued research, there's so much more about William Grimes that has not been captured in the narrative or in the film. But so now I'm in the process of doing even more work with the Grimes story, getting it out there. And I'm also hoping to include my Gold Rush heritage as well, because what's interesting about the Grimes narrative, he talks about his family, some of his family members leaving New Haven and going to California in search of gold. I had no idea at the time that I read his narrative that he was talking about my family line. One of his youngest daughters left New Haven, Connecticut, and went to San Francisco with other siblings. Even William Grimes' wife went with them. William Grimes stayed in New England, as did other siblings, and they never lost connections. I found where they went back and forth from San Francisco to New England or New Haven, Connecticut. So there's this rich story that comes full circle that I'm now working on. And one thing I would like to say about this Grimes narrative, and this is all Bill Andrews, I would not have been able to put any of this together without his assistance. He was able to tell me that William Grimes was the first person to go through slavery in the South and write about it. Now, that sounds real simple.
Right.
But we have to really understand the magnitude of that. Slavery, until then, was always written from the perspective of the enslaver. William Grimes countered that story with his narrative. He was the first person to tell you a far different story. And it came from someone who lived it. William Grimes' narrative is important today because it's like holding a mirror to America. William Grimes not only sheds light on slave plantation slavery, he's also had been enslaved in Savannah, Georgia, which was far different than, you know, plantation enslavement, because he's this enslaved person in urban Savannah where he has a little more mobility. He's working for as a coachman, so he is able to get around. William Grimes also talks about the Savannah Watch, where white men were empowered to deputize black people free and enslaved. He talks about the jail system that's the precursor to the jail system that we know today. He's the first person to write about how hard it was for a man of color to make it in the free states. Mm. He talks about, or by example, showing you how racist New England was and how it was tied to slavery in the South indirectly. Mm-hmm. Even though we have to also understand that slavery existed in New England, but we tend to forget those things.
Right.
So it's an incredible story. It's one of the most important slave narratives for today because it sheds light on all of the unfinished business that we're dealing with in terms of race relations, prison systems in this country. So it's a powerful narrative on many levels, and we're just now fully recognizing that.
Mm. I mean, it is a very powerful story, and just to list those things that we can kind of tie back to slavery in the first person, you know, from the viewpoint of someone enslaved to the systems that we see in place today is amazing. And it seems like for you, as you continue to do this research and find out more about his life and, you know, kind of document as well your the gold rush ancestors, you know, that came to San Francisco of yours, that, you know, his children, that's a fascinating story. So I have one last question for you, because you've been on this journey for quite some time. You did a movie about it. What have you most enjoyed? I'm sure there's a lot of things, but is there, you know, one or two things you've enjoyed the most about this journey in search of William Grimes and your family history?
There's so many moments to talk about here, but the most important one is the fact that there is power in reclaiming your past. Mm. I don't care who you are, where you've been, to reclaim your birthright will change your life. So his story transformed my life. He told me what I could be. He gave me license to reach higher. Here's a man who picked up the bare bones of reading and writing, found a way to tell his story. And not only tell it, but to publish it and to register it with the state of Connecticut for posterity. He did all of those things. So he showed me by example what I can do. Mm. There was no hesitation, you know, about was I equipped to tell his story. In the beginning, yes. But after I got through and I saw who this man was and what he was made of, I realized by extension I could do the same thing. So that is the grand reward. Mm-hmm. And now all of that is preserved for the next generation, my children and I, and my granddaughter, who is just 4 weeks old.
Oh, wow.
So, yes, it's just that has been the amazing, most enjoyable, most important reason for all of this. I want to leave you with this quote by Carter G. Woodson. He says, "Those who have no record of what their forebears have accomplished lose the inspiration that comes from the teaching of biography and history." Mm. I mean, there's no inspiration if a biography was never recorded. There's no inspiration if a history had never been chronicled. Suppose I never mm-hmm. had William Grimes' story. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be the person that I am today.
Right.
So inspiration is a powerful thing. It could fuel a cause, mm-hmm. or it could ignite a passion. And the only thing you have to do is to give yourself permission. And that is a virtue that I now live by.
Mm. That's so great. That is such a, I just don't even know what to say. It's such a powerful way to end the conversation because I don't want to fill it with words that can't compete with that. I mean, that is, this has been wonderful, fascinating, truly inspiring. Just to talk through your journey, how you continued on your journey, even when you were about to give up, you know, still push forward. And I think that's fantastic. And the way in which this has changed you and inspired your life and told his story and preserved his story is so great. And I just hope and pray that people get inspired to do the same with their family histories. Because even if you don't have a story like William Grimes, every family has a story. Your ancestors, I think it's a duty to find that story, preserve that story, and share the stories of our ancestors whose voices were not heard and whose voices were lost, right? So if we can find anything to make them known, I think we should do that. And one of the ways I'll leave folks with this that I do with my family is that I just write about them in various journals or articles, even if just so they're there and a little bit of their story is known. And the way in which I went on my own journey is hopefully guides people on their journey. So I want to thank you so much for the conversation today. It's been great. And I look forward to having you back because I want to know about this California Gold Rush thing. I'm all over that. So since we both live in California, so I definitely want to have you back for that, for sure. So thank you so much.
Kenyatta, thank you. It has been a pleasure. I follow your work. You are just amazing to me, and I'd love to come back. So thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Conversations with Kenyatta is produced by Kenyatta D. Berry and Caitlin Owl and features Kenyatta D. Berry. The music for this episode was Good Vibe by Ketza. Follow Kenyatta on Instagram under the handle kenyatta.berry, on Facebook at facebook.com/kenyattadb, and on Twitter at kenyattadb. You can also find more information on her book and upcoming events on her website at kenyattaberry.com. As a reminder, the views expressed by guests on Conversations with Kenyatta are their own and do not reflect the views of Kenyatta D. Berry.